The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.
It's gone to the short side. Oh, it's not gone to the short side. It's gone to the try line. Antoine Murray.
I don't think we met before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
Hi, Rob. Zeeb's here. Just want to discuss the captaincy next.
He's calling.
And Ringrose comes through. Oh. That is brilliant from Ringrose. Ringrose is going here. What a score.
You're very welcome to the Hard Yards.
I'm Andy McGeady. Mike McCarthy has just done a front roll across the studio. I've managed to dig my way out of the family home to be with you here. James Downey here is too. How are you, Jimmy?
Andy.
Don't put that on now.
Interesting start to the morning, but
how are you, Mike?
I'm good, thanks. Just currently moving house, so it's been a bit stressful.
You look limber.
Yeah, no. I was in complete lockdown with the snow, so I was getting cabin fever for 3 days. But we're getting there. Because I'm moving house, I had no broadband, had no Sky for the last kind of 5 or 6 days. So my daughter's had The Little Mermaid and Frozen on repeat for 3 days, so it's been pretty tough. Yeah, so they're the only two DVDs we left out, and they're the only ones she'll watch.
I wish you could picture the grimace on Mike's face as he.
There's real pain, isn't
there's
it?
Pain there. There's certain
so
pain.
Getting out to go for a 40-minute walk was just amazing.
Cool, man. So yeah, so you're going back to Newcastle, yeah?
That's it. Yeah, moving to the Toon.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, don't worry, I'll be back and forth every week. So
can we stop him?
We can catch up still.
That's good.
That is good. How did the snow treat you, Jimmy?
Yeah, it was all right. Not too bad. Quiet enough. You know, you're at home and just dying to get out, aren't you? I think everyone's had enough of it now. You just want to, right, done, move on.
We decamped to the parents' house because my boiler's gone. And 4 days of shoveling coal into a back boiler, I really didn't want to do that.
Did you? You've been with the pain as well.
Wait for me.
Exactly. Shovel snow instead. Yeah. No, not good. But obviously my shoulders are now huge, yeah?
I was going to say, you're working out.
I built a snowman as well with my daughter. That was good. That was good fun, to be fair. That was the highlight of the 3 days.
I took the young fella tobogganing down the road in an IKEA bag. If you want to send us stuff for me mentioning that, please do. There was a nice little tale about Jonathan Davies over in Wales. There's the man doing a responsible thing in the snow.
Yeah, no, fair play to him. It's impressive, wasn't it?
Yeah.
I think he got his...
You've got a 4x4, haven't you, Joe?
No, I'd love one, though. Oh. I'd love one.
Is that the one he keeps in his garage and just polishes?
Jeez. I wish now. I don't know, you're probably still on an IRFU car, are you?
Oh, no. Qashqai. Qashqai, so... Yeah.
Sponsored?
No, not sponsored. That all goes, doesn't it, when you retire, so...
Yeah.
And the gym membership.
What does happen? Do they just arrive at the front door and say, give me the car?
Pretty much. Yeah. It's like the Grim Reaper comes around, you get your car taken, you get your gym memberships gone, your 20% discount for coffees is gone.
You don't get any free free food anymore. Any discount of food, it's like, so I have to pay for what?
No, plugging stuff on social media.
Yeah, gyms are expensive too, aren't they?
They are, yeah.
What are you saying?
Just like, if I haven't had to pay for a gym for 15 years and then all of a sudden it's another expense.
Yeah, so it was a weekend without a lot of sport. We were all watching Connacht Cheetahs yesterday. I certainly was.
Yeah, no.
There's rugby on.
Yeah, exactly. I got Clermont La Rochelle.
Yeah, anything.
Anything going on.
Yeah.
Who's playing? Yeah, I'll watch it.
Yeah, that's not kids' TV.
I missed it, actually, the Connacht game.
Yeah, it was
good.
I
didn't have Sky, but because they lost at home to Zebre, didn't they? Then, you know, they got a really good win against Treviso, which is a tough place to play Treviso at home, and then... last minute kick, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was a decent game, as most games down with the Cheetahs are when they're playing at home in whatever it was, 25, 30 degrees. Very nice.
They could have got 5 points out of it, couldn't they?
Yeah, easy.
And then won.
They could have. Connacht were very, very close to having just a magnificent result down there because Cheetahs are good.
If Connacht had won, they would have been only the second team to have won there, is that right?
Yeah.
Glasgow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Ireland, Scotland, battle of the back rows, right? So think back to when you were not a lock and playing a lot more six. You have two very good back rows who are muscling in on every breakdown. What do you do if you're Ireland to compete against that?
Well, first of all, looking at that England game, the I think they got 9 turnovers or poaching. So Barkley and Hamish Watson are, you know, a real big threat at the breakdown. So no doubt Ireland will be in Carlton House, you know, looking at footage of those two being an absolute nuisance at the breakdown. You know, an Ireland's game is depends on quick ball from the breakdown. So you saw against France the weather conditions and the ref not reffing the breakdown, allowing them to flop on top of the ball. And as we said, it was pouring with rain. And then you see the difference against Wales, you know, good conditions, a ref who's reffing the breakdown properly, and we score, what was it, 5 tries? 5, was it? 5.
Yes.
Yeah, 5 tries. So, you know, the ref can make a huge difference to, you know, how many tries a team can score. So, but saying that, I don't think Wales go as hard as at the breakdown, and, you know, Scotland will be a big step up at the breakdown. Yeah, they are a nuisance slowing the ball. So it's all about the arrival at the breakdown. So the ball, your ball carrier, and then the reaction of the two guys clearing the ruck. I suppose what we sometimes refer to it as is winning the space. So getting in there early before they've got their hands on the ball. You know, if you're too late, it's virtually impossible to budge them, especially Hamish Watson, who's so small and squat, it's very hard to get rid of him. So yeah.
And you're talking, like, you're going to have to, needs to play against John Barkley. You try and take him out nearly before he gets to the breakdown, you know. You try and just don't let him get anywhere near it. Don't wait till he's actually engaged. It's because it's all over that stage. And think with Watson as well. Just these back rowers who can just get their hands in it and just completely ruin ball. And as Mike rightly said, it's slow ball just kills Ireland, really, you know. As you say, France game wasn't the best at all for that, like, and we just kind of struggle a little bit once we get speed to ball. But even it's 1 or 2 seconds that make a difference.
But Mike made a good point there. It's about the referee as well. So some referees will allow you to get in and get your hands on that ball and fight for a little bit longer than others. So as Nigel Owens was reffing Scotland against England, he's fairly well known for not wanting to blow the whistle at times and just say, right, you lads, get on with it, fight amongst yourselves, and I'll get involved if I really have to. It's Wayne Barnes in town this weekend. How different will that be if you're two back rows competing like that?
Well, I think it's a lot to do with the conditions, because, you know, it's a team like Scotland playing in the rain. That's when their back row, you know, at their best. It's I suppose that's the kind of game their back row want, because they're so good at getting in over the ball and slowing the ball down. So, you know, obviously depends on the ref, but, you know, a lot of it is down to the conditions. So, you know, hopefully the conditions will be good and, you know, like, we can open up like we did against Wales.
Ideally, you want to take the ref completely out of the equation, you know, and just, it is what it is, and it's speed of ball, and hopefully everyone does their job at the breakdown and he won't have to get involved if the Scots get in amongst it.
That's the sort of thing you say in a press conference.
If you want to talk about Barnes, then you're going to say, right, Wayne Barnes likes to be part of the show, the performance. I think, like, I see him as a guy who...
Now you mean that in a different way than a Nigel Owens one-liner?
Yeah, but Nigel lets it flow, and like we've mentioned before on the show, that Nigel Owens lets it play, okay, and you play ref, and the analysis you actually do on the referees now is like second to none. Like, you know, everything's done, what they're hot on, what their penalties are, what you can say, what you can do. You can speak back to some referees that listen to you, some you can't say anything in your march. So they have a big influence on the game. So the analysis will be done on Barnes. He likes to be in control. If you say anything, he's going to march you back 10, you know. So you're playing the referee, but if, look, you can really just got to take him out as much as you can. You do all the niceties that you have to do, but you don't want it to be about him, and you don't want him to make big decisions. And a lot of the time, he is involved in some of the big decisions that go on in games. I think, do you remember the Wales scrum and against France, and, you know, all the substitutions? I think that was him.
It was, yeah.
But, like, he loves that. Like, that's drama. He enjoys that sort of arena and a show, and you just don't want anything to happen like that. But he'll hopefully, you can just negate him. I know it's, like, as you say, it's a bit of a kind of cliche to say, look, just take the referee out, but it is, like, especially someone like him. Wayne or Nigel will let it play, fine, grand, you know what to do. If he lets you away with it, you get away with it. Gives you an inch, you take it. So
let's say we assume that it's Dan Levy has done enough to stay in the side. I personally think he has, but we'll see.
Well, he's as good as the Scottish back row at slowing the ball and turnovers. So,
and then add Mr. Armani to the mix. Very good at making life difficult for an opponent.
Absolute nuisance. Yeah. Breakdown and line out defensively.
Yeah.
Nose.
Yeah. Six noses on the pitch, yeah.
And then and CJ. So CJ is not bad in there. He's more known for the rampaging carries, but he's not bad in there. So Ireland, you know, taking the referee out is one thing, but Ireland do have the players to take advantage if they want.
Yeah, well, I think the worry for Scotland is they haven't won away in Ireland since 2010. I think they've won once in 20 years in Ireland. So,
and they beat us last year, so that's their lot.
So you know, we're not going to be, if we owe them one. So they beat us that first game.
What are you going to stop the bus somewhere? Yeah, you're going to stop the Scotland team bus single-handedly.
Coming out of their camp, Gregor Townsend talking about, you know, like they've got their waveform has to be better. The first game they beaten pretty heavily by Wales, and kind of they kind of went in as one of the favourites, and then after that Wales game everyone was writing them off, and then they had the good win against France where, you know, they showed really good heart because they went behind early on, and they were behind for most 40-50 minutes, and then came back to win that, and then that great performance against England. So, you know, like, there's no doubt Ireland will be taking them extremely seriously. Gregor Townsend's been talking about they need to improve their away form. But you know, I'm glad they did beat England there, because you know, I'm not sure why they don't get as much. I think they deserve more respect than they've got. They've certainly a lot better under Gregor Townsend, beating Australia away from home, beating them at home, and then you know they came very close to beating the All Blacks at Murrayfield. So you know, they're quality side.
They're able to produce these one-off performances. I think you can look back the way Ireland used to do it. Like, you can always produce a one-off. It's the All Blacks, right, we'll up our game or whatever, and things suddenly change. I do agree with you that I think Gregor's installed a sort of winning mentality, and I think everyone expected a lot more. Obviously, haven't seen how Glasgow played, and he thought, right, this is going to be a seamless transition into international rugby. But I think it's going to be an interesting one. I do think away form, like, okay, you can win at home, you can produce it against the English, you know, and in a one-off game. But now it's away from home in Ireland against a team who are favourites. I completely agree with Mike. I'm glad that they produced that win against England, because one team's always due a performance, so it'll be in the back of their mind that they don't produce away from home. That'll be hanging over them in the back of their minds, perhaps. But yeah, I do look, they're a decent side, aren't they? They've quality players all over the park.
Well, and as we said last week, like, it's important to remember that Scotland can win the championship, and it's not a theoretical thing. If they beat Ireland, it's a real thing, because then they have a run chased against Italy on the last day, which Scotland are set up to chase points if they want to do that. Now, the lock decision. So Ian Henderson is coming back in. That's just happening. Who do you pick? Is it James Ryan or is it Devon Tonner? We were here a few weeks ago, right? But now we've seen a couple of performances since. Eyes are all on you, Mike. Who are you picking?
Well, you know, Dev and James Ryan played really well last week against Wales, so you could stick with that and go for having that kind of 100% security of winning your own line out and disrupting their line out. You see Dev getting up at the tail, you know, on the Welsh ball, really disrupting it. So I mean, you could go with that, but then obviously Hendy comes in and brings a whole different dimension of physicality, both defensively and with his carrying. So I mean, Hendy, I'm sure, will be straight back in. So I'd probably go for the same formula as, you know, the France game, that Hendy and James Ryan, because you know they've both been playing phenomenally well, and then Dev, his experience to come off the bench. You know, I think it's a great. I think it's a great mix. You could go with anyone really, but yeah,
there's no bad decision here.
No, it's a great problem to have.
Yeah, exactly, like, you know, yeah.
But I think because we mentioned the back row as well, Henderson straight away come in there as well in terms of an extra back rower in there, and then it's interesting. I might have thought maybe a bit kind of defensively that they might have gone with Dev just to kind of negate Johnny Gray a little bit perhaps in the line out, but take him in. He's a big player for them. So, but look, I guess you got to give trust in the youth, as they say, and kind of go with James Ryan. I'd like to see James Ryan and Henderson play, and then obviously you've got that experience of Dev coming on.
Yeah, just on that, just like, it just shows the strength and depth in the squad at the moment. You know, like, I think we mentioned it before on the podcast, but you know, the 2015 when we beat France, and then that quarterfinal we lost all those big players, you know, Paul Lee, Sean O'Brien, Jared Payne was out, Tommy Bogue got injured straight away, whatever. You know, we've really got serious depth now. You saw Tadhg Furlong getting injured and Andrew Porter coming in, you know, he was an absolute beast against Wales. And same with Chris Farrell coming in, getting man of the match. It's just phenomenal. The strength and depth is ridiculous. Chris Farrell's now gone out, and you know Gary Ringrose is going to come in. So
well, that seems to be the working assumption. But is it the safe assumption? He hasn't played a lot of rugby.
He hasn't played a lot of rugby, but still a quality player. You know, I think. Like, completely agree with Mike again in terms of the squad depth that we have now. Like, if we lost an O'Driscoll or something or whoever, like a couple of years ago, like we'd be like, oh no, who are we gonna use? Or if we lost Paulie, or like the World Cup showed it.
Or Mike Ross.
Yeah, and that was exactly. Yeah, yeah. Or even John Hayes
before him. Yeah, yeah,
completely.
Exactly.
You lose these players, and like, where do we go? But now we have so many decent quality players. Like, if we lost two centres in a row, like, we'd be scratching our heads, like, you know. What are we going to do? Are we going to have to maybe put Roger 12 or whatever, like, you know, or bring in a 10-12, like, you know. But I do think, look, I think Ringrose, back to Ringrose, I'd completely parachute him in.
Would you?
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Okay, he hasn't played much ball, but...
Much bull. He's worse than you.
Yeah, you're like the kid now.
Sorry,
yeah,
he planted that seed in my head. But no, completely. He's defensively astute. He knows the position inside out. Otherwise, what are you looking to do? You're looking to maybe bring in Roy Scannell and play him at 12 and push Bundy out. That's a lot of mess. And the other one's Earls into the 13.
Earls is the one that... So there's a couple of things happening here, because it isn't just we've lost one centre. It's like you say, we've lost a few of them. You can add Payne to the list as well.
Yeah.
So we've lost a string of centres now in the 13 channel, and I've mentioned before, Earls is a superb winger, like top drawer. I don't think he's good as a centre, but he's the most experienced guy out there that we have. And if we're talking about someone who can step in and know all of the positioning there and what everyone needs to do, I've got a weird gut feeling that perhaps we might see a surprise.
Really?
Yeah, it's just...
But who do you think Earls? Is that your...
Just this weird possibility, and then they bring in Fergus McFadden on the wing.
But he's playing so well on the wing.
I agree with you.
So why would you change... Like, okay, it's such a different position, 13. Like, I couldn't play there at all. Like, you know, it was so hard defensively to make reads. There's a lot going on. So you have a natural 13 who's been there, done that. Bring him in and play him
just
there.
And just one change.
Yeah, and okay. Otherwise, there's so much then Earls he's played. Obviously, he can... slot in there and he covers a lot of positions, but like, he's playing so well in the wing, leave him there. If need be later on, you can push him in if things aren't working out. But for him to change his mentality of coming into 13, there's a whole lot more going on in such a big game. Like, it's tough. Well, oh, here we go, this fella's been okay, he hasn't played too much rugby, but it's natural for him to be in attack and defence, yeah, making reads.
And he's part of the system. He's already been here. Fine. On a similar subject, so we talked briefly last week about Ireland's problems in width defensively. So, and specifically we're talking about the Italy game and the Wales game. You're seeing multiple tries go in the wide channels, and even stuff which didn't actually end up in a try, it seems like a weakness. Jimmy, what are we talking about when we say Ireland are getting a bit narrow defensively, and... What could you see changing this week?
Well, firstly, I think it starts at the breakdown, about slowing that ball down. I think against Italy, when we let teams get the front foot, get that go forward, we're not organised quick enough. We just need that one or two more seconds to get that one player, maybe push him out a little bit further away from the ruck, and everyone else can get into position. I'm actually kind of look back on the game the last day, and I don't know if it was a bit, not easy, but Jacob Stockdale to me looked a little bit at sea defensively. You know, he's coming up and he's not making the right decisions. You know, he's kind of coming up trying to, not taking the defender. He's just maybe a hit or hope. Okay, he got the intercept, great, but the try before, for Shingler's try, it's a shot in the dark and he's not taking anyone, and Parks gets the pass over the top and it's 2-on-1. Navidi finishes or to Shingler, but if he stays out, he can make them reads. It's people are making wrong decisions. Again, you're looking at when Ferg stepped in and Scott Williams got the offload. It's decision making's out in the wide channel. It's a very tough position to be in. I'm not going to disagree with that, but it starts for me around the breakdown. Like, everyone runs towards it. Go on.
Yeah, this is what I want to get to, because this is something you talked about before we went on air, or we just didn't get into it on the show last week. And you said that the problem happens much earlier than perhaps we might realise at home watching it on TV. that someone has been dragged somewhere that they're not supposed to be, maybe a couple of phases beforehand, and then you see the result happen out wide.
I think it starts, for me, it starts from, if there's a line break, the defensive systems change completely. So someone makes a small line break, everyone's out of structure, and this is what attacking teams look for. Most teams on a line break will run towards where the breakdown is, so they'll get narrow automatically, while an attacking side will keep the width and hopefully try and pick off one pass from the 9 to the 10 or first receiver. Normally takes out, as they call it, a pillar, post pivot, or whatever you want to call it, but like the 1-2-3 beside the ruck. Mm-hmm. And you can see how narrow teams get when they're in a line break. If you can slow that ball down, you can push that little bit wider and get one more player out, because it's only one player really that we keep getting beaten with. Like, you know, that extra player that the attack seem to have, or short one man, or someone gets caught on the wrong side and blind side, and you actually have to just make sure you step in, push him wider, you know. And it's like, as I say, from line breaks, it's bloody hard, you know, and that's why you've got to be a bit of a nuisance, a bit of a noz.
That's exactly what happened in that Scotland game last year. Like you were saying, it depends on the speed of the ball, but what was happening was one pass from 9 to 10 for Scotland was taking out 4 or 5 of our defenders. So it actually looks like the guys are, you know, making a mistake out wide, but it actually starts from, you know, as you say, from that pillar position, taking out one pass, taking out 5 defenders. You just got to get your spacings right, and then when you've got your spacings, you can get more go forward and get more line speed. Whereas if you're congested and all standing on top of each other, you know, it's when you've got the likes of Hogg and Seymour out wide and there's space, you know.
Well, that leads us on. I mean, we're talking about Ireland defensively here, but Scotland are a team that can take advantage of this. You know, we talked about Finn Russell a lot last week, and deservedly so after that performance and that pass. But Hugh Jones, can we talk about him again?
Of course you can.
Yeah, thanks.
You like him, do you?
I like him a lot. Yeah, man crush. Hugh Jones, Stuart Hogg, obviously. I mean, these guys can hurt any team. So they're not a team we really wanted to face if we're trying to make those changes.
The worrying thing is that Jones and Hogg have actually, not Jones, Seymour and Hogg have actually been, I don't think they've scored, have they?
No, they've been relatively quiet, haven't they?
Yeah,
like,
they have.
And you're just kind of nearly waiting for them to explode. Right. But they
were a decent way up in the top try score at the start.
Hopefully they don't come to life this week.
Yeah.
But I think on your point, it's going to be interesting to see how they're going to tactically look at that. Whether they just kind of, there's one way you can kind of leave the breakdown and just have as many people on their feet as possible and fill the field. Mm. Or we can try and go to breakdown, as we spoke about before, attack it, slow it down, and people can actually get organised and, rightly say, get that spacing right.
Because you can't show someone like Stuart Hogg the outside and say,
no, but that's why
you can have the touchline.
But even the sniff, but even the way Finn Russell plays, he plays on the gain line. He's gonna interest those first couple of defenders. Like normally you'd have your third person out from the ruck is going to be on the first receiver. So if one pass is beaten 5 players, you're in trouble, and there's a defensive error straight away. Mm. And especially, like, Finn's happy, like, he's a box of tricks, isn't he? So
And it's not just him, they've got Horn outside him.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That's, again, someone who can take advantage of perhaps an Irish system not being as finely tuned in the centres as it might be.
Yeah, and he'll do little chips. He'll do his pass near the back, he'll do wide passes, he'll do a lot of crossfield kicks to wingers. He'll keep you guessing, and he'll try and manipulate that defence so he can get Stewart into the game and Tommy Seymour into the game.
We need to channel Alan Wynne-Jones. Did you see him sitting on top of Conor Murray at one stage?
Smart play.
Very good. Yeah, Murray was going nuts. But
it's very Mike McCarthy-esque.
The dark arts.
Yeah,
the
absolutely.
Just going back to that defensive thing. I think they've been talking about it's communication, more communication needed, because I mean the system's good. Andy Farrell's like one of the best defensive coaches in the world, and you know the work rate's really good. It's just like the decision making, so sticking to the system, so not going hard and jumping out the line, you know, just everyone on the same page, sticking to the system.
There are other games going on this weekend, mightn't seem like it, but France and England. This is very interesting. We should keep an eye on this for obvious reasons, because Ireland, by my maths, can win the championship this weekend.
Le crunch.
France haven't brought back in the players.
Le petit bois.
That word. Versus les russes bouffes. Whatever.
Yeah, that's that French coming.
It is.
Coming in handy that week you signed for Narbonne.
Oh, yeah.
It's a good week, that. Oh, you're making him cry now.
Sorry, mate.
Oh, that's rough. But yeah, France haven't brought in their players that they dropped, and England are in chaos, it seems, so reading the papers.
Bastereau made a big difference in them, didn't he?
He was good.
He did, didn't he?
Yeah.
We talked with. I mean, Bastro is a lot more than a big lump. He's a good player. Good hands.
He's got deft skills, isn't he? Like, you know, for as you say, for a big man, he's.
And he is a big, big man.
I played against him before, and like, literally, where do you hit him? You know, like, he's so solid up top, and you have to try and get those quads, like, and you're just trying to, like, he's
get
a tough
one,
man.
Get one quad.
He's a tough man to put down, but, like, France use him quite smartly. He sucks in two or three defenders every time.
Yeah,
so it's,
and he's if you watch him, like he shifts his running line very well. You know, he is not just running at a guy. He's trying to run at it somewhere where he's a little chink of room, and then he's very good at getting the ball away. He's good player.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, and low centre of gravity, and just, as you say, if someone that big coming at a bit of pace, and if they have a little bit of footwork, you're in a bit of trouble.
Yeah. England are, I think, probably perceived as being in a bit of trouble after losing up in Edinburgh. The papers are questioning people like Dylan Hartley's captaincy. Is it right that your captain gets pulled ashore so early in a game? Legitimate question. Danny Kerr versus Richard Wigglesworth in terms of who should be their starting nine, which would be amazing given that Kerr's been in the mix for so long. Young's injuries obviously changed things, as well as Eddie Jones not picking other scrum halves along the way.
Yep.
Even Mara Itoje, golden child, you know, form being questioned. It's great fun if you're in Ireland, but are these real questions, or is it people overreacting to one defeat?
I think overreacting. They've only lost two, haven't they? It was in 23 games to Ireland and then to Scotland. And yeah, the performance was poor. But you know, Scotland played unbelievably well. And like we said, Scotland have beaten Australia there. They nearly beat the All Blacks. So, you know, there's obviously plenty to work on for England. But I don't think it's... that's the thing about giving the Scottish side the respect they deserve. I think they're a quality side.
And everything went well for them. I mean, that's the key thing. You know, Scotland have reached the point where if everything goes well, they can beat everyone else, you know, bar the All Blacks, because no one could do that, really.
Yeah, but doing that on a consistent basis is where they haven't done it, which is what Gregor's trying to strive for the Scottish side, is to consistently beating teams every week is obviously what they want.
In fairness, it's not just about Scotland. Ireland still aren't doing this as well. This is the 2019 question, where Ireland seemed to just not be able to do that multi-week exercise during a World Cup. It falls apart at one stage. So one of the exercises here with the Grand Slam is, yes, winning a Grand Slam will be great, also preparation for the World Cup. The other side of it is, you don't get the two rest weeks in the World Cup unless you've got a really solid schedule.
But this is where we kind of looked at the last World Cup, and we had injuries, and we had the frontline injuries who struggled. And this is what I'm sure the notes to Joe Schmidt were like, right, we need
fix this for next time.
Yeah, it is, exactly. Yeah. It's going well. So,
is there any way that England mess up in Paris?
There's always a way against the French. I can't really see it, but
are we falling into sort of lazy stereotypes when we say France will turn up?
I think mentally France will be up for this one more than any other game.
So. Can we move it to the old Parc de France? Because that would have been an atmosphere.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Look, I know you don't like hearing that about the French, but until they show something different, it falls back into that. Like, it's annoying. It really is like that. Which France gonna? But it is.
My point is, I'm not sure that the good France is there.
Are those players back? That
No. Without, mind you, again, it's France. They could all be named on the team. Right. Who knows?
That's it. You know, like, it's whatever works, isn't it? Like, you know, who wants to play this week?
Bring back Fabien Pelouse.
Yeah. Got to watch out for that furniture in France as well, haven't you?
Yeah, it's
a lot of furniture going around, a lot of injuries from furniture.
That was good, actually. Well done to Owen Slot in the Times. He picked up, he was obviously at the dictionary out and looking at Lake Heap's report on the furniture attacks in Scotland. It's very good. I recommend looking it up. But France have form in this.
They do.
It's very dangerous going to bed. You wouldn't have ever had an injury going to bed, Jimmy, would you?
No. Not Mike.
Nothing that you blamed.
I'm going to be honest, I've absolutely no idea what you're talking about. What's happened?
So when the French players were dropped, some of the reasons given officially for the injuries received, and again, we're casting no aspersions or doubt whatsoever, were that they, let me get this right. Arturo Turia, the French lock, this is according to Owen Slot's piece. I got back to the hotel about 3 a.m. and I jumped into my bed, except I didn't jump on the bed but next to it, and I opened up my face by hitting the edge of the bedside table.
I've not heard this, you're serious?
Yeah, it goes on. Geoffrey Pally, who had played fullback that day, is said to have injured himself on his bedside lamp. Good one, eh?
WWF in the rooms, were they?
Yeah. And of course, the
Royal Rumble.
And the good people of Lakeheap, of course, they remember back to Mr. Bastro.
Yeah, New Zealand, yeah.
When he was a young...
To be fair, accidents do happen, so...
that's a lot of accidents in one weekend in Edinburgh. That's a lot.
A lot of hotel accidents, yeah.
Yeah.
Furniture.
So, yeah, recommend that piece. It's good. Okay, we will leave it there. We'll be back with your Twitter questions and a bit of news on an interesting deal with Harlequins and New Zealand Rugby.
Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day. You can watch the start, fall off for 40 minutes, come back, see the end, perfect. You know what I mean? You've missed nothing, really. Remember, Rod, Kev in the Killiney used to have to bring two TVs into the room, one for you for Cheltenham. Like every red-blooded male in the country, he'd be watching the horse racing, whereas I'd have a TV for myself for things like Murder, She Wrote and Houses Under the Hammer. Murder, She Wrote is the perfect thing to watch during the day.
You're welcome back to the Hard Yards Rugby Show. As always, subscribe to the show on iTunes and all good podcast apps. Get it straight to your phone. Before we get to the Twitter questions, this is a really interesting little bit of news this week about a deal between Harlequins and the All Blacks.
Good bit of business.
It is. It's smart, isn't it?
We'll see. So for anyone who hasn't seen it, I mean, there's some good stuff out there. There's, of course, the media release stuff everywhere. But, Alex Lowe in the Times has a good long piece in it. Some of the New Zealand media have good work on this as well. In a nutshell, what the New Zealand Rugby Union have done is they've said, okay, well, we're losing All Blacks and the layers below the All Blacks hand over fist here. They're either chasing what they might term a sabbatical, or really they're chasing money and contract, and they want to try and control this. So Liam Napier wrote about this in, I want to get this right, I think it's the New Zealand Herald. I think so. About a month ago, he said, look, they are planning this. They're planning official link-ups with teams around the world, I think both in Japan and in Europe. Harlequins are the first one to formally be named, I think, but now you're going to see someone like Nick Evans go to New Zealand, get some coaching experience there under the New Zealand Rugby Union, to then probably go back to Quins with that bit under his belt, and then also seeing it in the player level as well. So New Zealand trying to control the player drain. What do we think of this?
It was saying, when I was reading it this morning, it was saying that the academy players going over to get Mitre 10 and vice versa. So, you know, that's great for the players to get that experience, and the fact they share a sponsor, I think, is a big part of it as well. Adidas. And then it's for the All Blacks, will be training at the Stoop before they play England. That's the gist of it, isn't it?
But also the other side as well, I think it's the Kiwi players coming over. Obviously, it's great exposure for the, like, to get the academy guys going down the summer, it's going to be great for them. But I think, as you say, the Kiwi players coming over, if they're taking a sabbatical, they can control them. They're going to London, they can maybe, with our partnership, manage the player as much as they can.
Yeah, and perhaps not close their own door on being selected for the All Blacks.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's a big decision. If you were leaving New Zealand, they have been cast iron, saying, well, sorry, you're turning your back on the black jersey. So this seems to be a slightly different way. It's not going to the McCaw level of formal sabbatical, because you're not taking time off rugby. You're just saying, listen, off you go.
Yeah, you don't want that player drain, do you?
No.
And go, right, if you're gone, you're gone. So,
well, again, I think they're trying to get in front of this. It makes me think, I mean, would Ireland consider similar?
I just noted that there. Like, did it not come up that they were looking at the kind of fifth province in... It's come up a few times, I think, when Bob Casey was at London Irish. It was mentioned to maybe get, like, establish a foothold there where you could maybe set up a partnership that way to get players over there. And
was that not what Secret Agent O'Gara was doing at Racing, no?
Yeah, along those lines, yeah. But it's... Look, it makes sense as well, doesn't it? Like, you want the more players you have, especially from an Irish perspective, the more players you have getting that top level game exposure, it's obviously going to be beneficial. When you've got a conveyor belt of players coming out of Leinster, say, and there's only so many players can go to Connacht or wherever, like, and to have them go to England, different game, completely different game actually, and look, they're exposed to that and they come back better players if need be. But it's, again, if you can control the players. So, IRFU is huge on player control, player welfare.
And that's it. So the best, well, correct me if I'm wrong, my opinion would be that the best version of this we saw was uncontrolled. It was Leo Cullen and Shane Jennings going to Leicester and coming back hardened. They'd got the experience of everything. But that wasn't controlled. What would be ideal from the IRFU point of view is if you can release those players and you know they're coming back in 2 years with that experience, and you'd also have to have something in there, which I assume that New Zealand Rugby are doing, is saying, well, you can't just flog the guy every week. Yeah. You know, part of the deal is
you don't want to be the Johnny Sexton playing matches, and even Greg Laidlaw playing for Clermont. Like, you play last week and then right bang straight over playing with Clermont, and just as you say, flogging the body, getting your, like, they don't care, you know.
So no, exactly.
I want my
we've paid for this piece of meat. We're going to use it. Yeah, fair enough. Yeah, professional game, innit? Twitter questions. There's a lot. I think people were very, very glad to get some questions in the snow. First one, the news of the week. Well, some of the news of the week. What are the likely options for the IRFU with regards to helping Ulster, and who are the possible head coach options? This is from David. John O'Gibbs, gone. Les Kiss, gone.
Well, I've worked with both coaches, Les Kiss and John O'Gibbs. So I worked with Les Kiss with Ireland, and he was defence coach then, and he's a great coach. He's a great attitude, loads of energy, and you know, I think you have to as a defensive coach. So I really enjoyed working with him. So I'm sorry to see he's gone. And then I worked with John O'Gibbs my first year at Leinster, and again, one of the best coaches I've ever been coached by, real hard-nosed guy, and you know, gets the best out of the forwards. So, you know, I thought it was great when Les left. I was thinking, well, you know, can build a team or a squad around John O'Gibbs. So, you know, it's from the Ulster perspective, it's sad to see him go, because you know, he's a great guy. So, yeah, no, it's tough for Ulster, because to lose Les, then Jono. Yeah.
I mean, to be clear, Gibbs is there to the end of the season. Is gone immediately. But James, it's not brilliant. If you're an Ulster fan sitting there, you're just looking at it. It looks like a mess.
It looks like a mess, and it's, I think it is a complete mess. Yeah. As you say, I worked with Les as well and thought he was brilliant. I thought, like, when he was going to go up there, he'd actually bring them on a hell of a lot, you know, and get a bit of structure there. But it just seems to be that no matter who they're putting in there, it's not the right fit for some reason, but be it something has to change behind the scenes. I think sometimes you got to look at the structure as well of Ulster. Like, I know that their underage system isn't great, you know. I know if you finish school up in Ulster, there's, I'm nearly 100% sure that there's no under-20s system at all. So, like, we come out of school here or wherever, your clubs, and you go in to play, every club will have an under-20s system. Ulster don't. So you come out of school and you go straight into, like, a Dungannon first team or whatever. There's no under-20s. There's no step, and sometimes that's too big a step for players. And it's shown underage, like, you know, that there's not many Ulster players involved with the Irish 20s. And
well, I think there's a really good piece published this weekend by the Demented Mole. I don't know the Demented Mole's name, but when they write, read. It's very good. Is it you? Have you been writing under a pseudonym all these years?
That's not my name.
This is a few thousand words on the current position of Ulster Rugby, and one of the things the Mole hits on is this jump from under-20s up, and it's the lack of academy products in the current Ulster squad, and it's a consistent thing. So he's seen players, I'm assuming it's a he, by the way, sorry, he or she, is seeing players who are doing really well at international under 20 level for Ireland, and they just don't get to the Ulster full squad. Really good piece, recommend looking it up, best thing I've seen on it yet. There's another I'm going to lead straight to another question because it's related. Journalists have reported a reason for the lack of academy development at Ulster is the quality of the club sides in AIL in relation to AIL stroke A games. How much of a difference is there between them, Drew Davis? But this is the thing we were talking about before. There's no Ulster sides in the top division of the AIL.
No, and they used to be. You used to have your Dungannons, Belfast Harlequins, Ballymena. They used to be strong sides and packed with Ulster players. Okay, that was a while ago and things move on, but it's disappointing, you know, like, you kind of see these sides and they can get back there, but, like, A games are okay, like, you know. And
what's the difference? Would you prefer your player playing in an A game or an AIL game?
AIL. Yeah. It's just kind of hardens you a little bit more, I think, playing in or UBL now as it is.
Sorry,
like,
you're right. No,
yeah, but it's
UBL.
Yeah. But it's like it does. Like, it kind of you're coming out of school, and especially young lads, and like you've got to have a gap in between. If you're going to play 20, some are going to jump up straight, as I mentioned earlier, straight to their senior squad. But yeah, you're going to have
that,
to.
That doesn't happen often.
Yeah, but you need a stepping stone of right kind of out of school. Like, it's a different game. Like, bigger players, smarter players,
someone's
players.
Someone's sitting on you.
Exactly. But like, it makes you. And some of these A games, I think, and they're a bit of a waste of time. I'd prefer to if they played the UBL, but maybe that's because I'm involved.
They're stopping the LV Cup next season, aren't they? So hopefully there'll be more players available to play AIL.
Mm.
Oh, really? Okay. Well, that's good. That's a shambles of a thing, like, isn't it? But like, it's amazing how clubs target that.
Hold on. Shambles? Too strong? Yeah, I know it is.
It's
yeah.
a strong word, James, but
no, but the amount of money they put into it, like at Saints beforehand, we used to, if we won, we used to send the kids out or the younger lads, the academy boys, to win, to play the first game. If we won the first game, we sure had it, because financially for the club, you made more money than winning the Premiership. Like, there was that much money in it.
Jesus.
Yeah. So like, you know, yeah, it's like our chief exec be like, right, team's going to be stacked now the next week. So the lads like, thanks for that one game, you made us win. So there goes our free weekends. And you're like, all right.
Next question and next news story from last week. With Jamie Heaslip retiring, does that make more cash for Leinster to go out and sign another big name player for next year? That's from Gav Sadlier.
No, he's centrally contracted.
Is it entirely IRFU funded? Was it?
Mike?
I'm not sure. But it's obviously going to free up some cash somewhere anyway.
Somewhere.
I don't know. I'm not sure. But
he was centrally contracted, though.
Yeah, he was. But I'm not sure the ins and outs of exactly how it works. But, you know, all
this
I know is...
This is very diplomatic.
I have no idea. He's just going to be a big loss, isn't he? Because...
Say nice things about Jamie.
Well, yeah, he's it's all been said, hasn't it? But I mean, he's had a phenomenal career, hasn't he? And he's not only that, he's a great bloke as well. He's off the field, he's a top guy. So he's pretty much achieved everything in the game, and a CV that most of us could only dream of. So sad news, because he's a guy who never really did get injured, and I suppose all the lads talk about how he. How professional he was in everything he did, how he prepared, what he did when he left. You know, he didn't just come in and train hard when he left. You know, he ate well, he stretched, he slept well, he was the ultimate professional. And, he was a great role model for the younger lads. And, a lot of guys, especially at Leinster, are ultra, ultra professional now. And a lot of that would be down to, looking up to Jamie as a role model.
But it's, I heard Brian O'Driscoll say that it was on the Lions tour, he never once was in with the physio. That's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
That's I remember. I read that somewhere as well. That seemed the strangest thing. That was on the South African Lions tour, I think, was it?
I don't know. Which
I'm
one
almost
was.
Certain it was. It was the South African tour. I hope I'm right about that.
Oh, that was like, I was like,
not even for a massage, like. No,
but that's good. But that proves.
Well, his old man's an army background, so that's where it must come from.
Show no
tough,
weakness.
Tough as old boots.
Yeah. What was he like to play? You've played against him, Jimmy, not with him, but.
he was always that one who never like kind of looked like he was that lightning pace or anything. Or but Jesus, like he was a tough man. He was he read the game so well. Like I used to struggle against him a bit.
From John O'Donovan, is it time for the Pro 14 to look outside of the competing countries for refs? Should each match have a neutral ref? I have a view on this. I think referees are their own like. It's they're almost their own nationality. They're referees. They're paid to do a job.
You're saying they're neutral.
I think that they've got more on it. Like their career is on the line. They're being assessed. I don't think that having neutral refs for the cost implications alone is a huge deal. Would it be ideal? Yeah, be great. But I will say there was a weird change about 10 weeks into the Pro 14 where suddenly the games over in South Africa started having all South African teams of officials, whereas up to then they'd send across a couple of non-South Africans. But does it make a difference to you guys where the referee's from when you're playing?
Don't really even think about it, to be honest.
No.
All I will say is that my old chum Frank Murphy is is doing really well with the reference. It's great to see former Leinster and Connaught and Munster, former Leicester
man, yeah,
not Leinster, but no, it's great to see him doing so well with the reffing. So I think he's really enjoying it, and he's doing great with it.
Yeah, no, it's great to get those ex-players back in doing that, especially I think at nine. And Frank's done a great job, hasn't he? Yeah. To be fair, to
there
him,
seem
so.
To be a few scrum halves.
Yeah,
on the pathway.
Carl Dixon as well over in the UK. I saw he was on. He was running the touch for Wasps against Irish yesterday. Mm. Yeah, no, it's look. Long may it continue.
Did you ever consider it? No,
you'd be a good ref,
like a standing in the middle and refereeing from the middle.
Who would be the better ref between both of you?
Probably me.
Why would you say that?
Greater knowledge of the game, fitter,
all round intelligence.
Yeah, intelligence, fitness. Right.
Would you command the respect though?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. Well,
you disagree?
Disagree.
Yeah. We'll see.
Be running. You'd have to be mic'd up, imagine.
I'd love to get you mic'd up.
Wait for me.
Sharon.
Who's Sharon?
It's Karen, mate. It's Karen.
Yeah.
Make next sure to
next,
use
next question.
Next question. We could be out of time. No, make sure to use the hashtag AskTHY if you want to get a question in for next week. So thank you. Thanks to James. Thanks to Mike. Thanks to Alan Lucknan for producing, and Shane Dempsey was on sound. We'll be back next Monday with a new podcast. Subscribe to it on iTunes, Podcast Republic, SoundCloud, and every good podcast app to get it straight to your phone. This has been The Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady. Thank you for listening to
this
show. And we'll
yards.
Talk
this
to you
is Mike
next.
McCarthy. We'll talk to you next week.
See ya.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.